Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Close Up Talk Radio, the unique internet broadcast series that brings you together with some of the most amazing, important, and interesting individuals from the worlds of business, industry, travel, art, and entertainment. From company owners, CEOs, and presidents, to the technical wizards behind the scenes who create the magic that make their company's products and services so special. Here is your opportunity to hear firsthand the fascinating stories of how it all happened from those who actually made it possible. This is Close Up Talk Radio. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to Close Up Talk Radio. I'm Doug Llewellyn, your host. It's nice to have you with us today as we begin the new year of broadcasts. Happy New Year to you, indeed. Welcome. Nice to have you back. Today, we're going to be talking, we're focusing on the subject of coaching, but executive coaching. As you know, there are coaches out there who focus on all kinds of aspects of your life. But today, we're going to be specifically focusing on executive coaching. This is for business executives. And for those of you who may be in the world of business and an executive of one sort or another and wonder whether having a coach would be a smart move, let me just point out that many of the most successful CEOs of the largest companies in America rely on executive coaches. They've utilized them or they still do on a daily basis. And to give you an example, Henry McKinnell, who's the former CEO of Pfizer, Meg Whitman, the CEO of Hewlett-Packard for years, Eric Schmidt, the current executive chairman of Google and Alphabet, are just a few who have used a trusted advisor or a coach on a regular basis. So if it's good enough for executives like that, let's face it, it's good enough for you and me, all of us, in fact. Today, we have a really good executive coach with us, and in order to be a good executive coach, our guest says you have to have a little gray hair. And I understand what she means by that, because executives don't want someone who is inexperienced in business. They want someone who is both current, but who has also lived some of the life and understands the business landscape. Our guest is Marianne Lepre-Nolan. She is an empowering and effective leadership consultant and an executive coach with an extraordinary background. She has over 30 years of experience, and she assists executives with personal transformation, leadership, and behavioral insights, as well as actualizing business strategy. She says there are two things that people value about her work and what distinguishes her in this field. One is that she understands business and how business people think. And the second is that she really cares. She may coach you for, let's say, 6 months or a year, but if 18 months down the road you have a question or a concern, give her a call. She's in touch with her clients because she cares about them, and in her opinion, it's not just a business transaction. She is a trusted advisor to Fortune 50 and professional services leaders. She got her start teaching executives at IBM how to use their computers, their new computers. How about that? Under IBM's Global Leadership Development Practice and the Executive Computing Program, she focused exclusively on IBM's top 50 executives and the senior management group, expanding their leadership capability, actualizing strategy, and effectively using technology. Today, she leverages her extensive practical experience toward new thinking for her clients, specifically in the realm of what is known as emotional intelligence, which is a pretty fascinating subject. Anyway, that's a little bit of her background, and I'm going to bring her on a little early to let her explain more. She started out in life, by the way, to become a coach. I mean, not be a coach, she was a teacher. She was a band director for public schools and went to college for that, and then she got a bachelor's degree and a master's degree. She taught in public schools for a number of years, 3 years, in fact, she had tenure, and she had a prize-winning marching band, but she found she was bored. And that's when she went into the corporate world. Let's let Marianne join us and explain a little bit more about her background. Madam Lepre-Nolan, nice to have you with us today. How are you?
Good afternoon, Doug. I'm just fine. Thank you for having me on the show.
Listen, it's a delight to have you here. I want to ask you to explain. I could have told this story, but I'd like you to explain for me how you became a coach at IBM. How did that How did that happen for you? Because as I understand it, an executive asked you if you'd join his team, and it went from there. Is that right?
Something like that. I don't think anybody, at least with a few gray hairs on their head, ever grew up thinking that they would become a coach. It really wasn't a bona fide profession, even 20 years ago. I had my whole life been a musician and wanted to become a band director. I did that. As you said, I got bored. And I wanted to do something more. And I kind of hedged. I took a leave of absence from the school system and joined IBM. When I joined IBM, I became fascinated by the technology. I was involved in telecommunications technology, got my certifications in PL1 programming. I learned a little assembler. And because I was already a teacher, they asked me to teach telecommunications. So I did that for a while. And in IBM, you have a variety of different careers. And by the time I hit approximately my 13th or 14th year there, I was sought out to become part of an executive computing platform, which was something that was commissioned by CEO Lou Gerstner because he felt as a computer company, everybody in the executive ranks should know how to use a computer. So I was selected to do that along with another gentleman. And between the two of us, we taught all of the top 35. Through those interactions, particularly with the senior group executive of HR, I was asked to become an executive coach because I was not only teaching the executives to use the technology, but I was actually consulting with them. As my mentor, Tom Bouchard, said, I had a hall pass into not only their offices, into their homes. So through those experiences, Tom asked me to become an executive coach in his function, and of course I knew nothing about HR, nor did I know anything about coaching. So he sent me to various behavioral educations and schools. I went to the Harvard Negotiating Project to learn about that. I went to a variety, the Hay Group up in Boston, to get different kinds of certifications, and when I'd get one, I'd come back, and I'd, in effect, practice. So that was my road, and as I grew in the art of coaching and the science of it, I found that I not only had an aptitude for it, but it was quite fulfilling. One of the most fulfilling things is to watch my clients make progress as they move forward as leaders.
Well, your background is so unique, and I must admit, you would know better than I know, quite frankly, but I would think you bring one of the most remarkable backgrounds as a coach into this built business of coaching, which has seemed to mushroom so much in the, as you say, 20 years ago, coaches just didn't exist. Today, you know, they're popping up in almost every aspect of someone's life. But a really good executive coach, someone like yourself, you have to be rather rare, I would think, in the coaching field. You spent many years with IBM. I know you also had a personal incident that happened when it was an illness that you were struck with. Something tells me that helped change your life. Do you want to talk about that? You're a cancer survivor, sure. I know. How did that impact your life when that happened?
Well, I think everybody who lives long enough has turning points. Sometimes you can see them on the horizon, and sometimes they just come up on you. For me, it was the latter. My husband was a professional firefighter. He's now retired. But I was diagnosed with breast cancer on 9/10. So the day before 9/11, I was diagnosed. And, of course, then there was 9/11, and all of our lives changed. The world changed. So fast forward, I decided that I wanted to accelerate some plans that my husband and I had for retirement, which was to live half the year in Key West, Florida, and live half the year in New York. And that wasn't going to happen while I was working for IBM. In June of 2002, IBM was offering a package, and I opted into that package so I could then hang my shingle and try and do the leadership consulting and executive coaching as an independent. And kind of the rest is history. I was picked up shortly after that by a niche firm on Capitol Hill, Alignment Strategies. They were a wonderful, niche consulting group, and I worked from them remotely, so their client was in New York. I was in New York. They were in Washington. I'd fly down once a month. A lot of work is performed by phone once the initial meetings and head nodding is done, And then in the following year, in 2000, in the spring of 2003, Duke Corporate Education asked me to sign on and work with them on a coaching project for a major Big Four accounting firm, a professional services firm and an accounting firm. And through that project, I really was introduced to financial services. Now, that's over 15 years ago. So in a way, my industry, my niche, is financial services. I work a great deal with partners in accounting firms, lawyers, private equity, asset management, banks, investment banks, and every now and then, a doctor or a lawyer.
When you say you work with them, in what respect do you work with them? I mean, are you as knowledgeable about the financial aspect, you know, of business as they are? They sound like they know what they're doing, you know, or would.
I have become educated over the years, and from having my experience as a business person in IBM, having my own P&L, excuse me, and having having run various parts of my business at IBM, I learned how to do a little bit of what my clients do now. Everybody does it differently, but I've had the experience sitting in their chair. Now, that said, I have not been a partner at an accounting firm, but because of my experience at IBM, my experience rings true with them. I can learn their business. I can understand the kinds of challenges they have. I am not deep in accounting knowledge, but I understand the stresses on that business. I understand how that business is undergoing change due to evolution and revolution in some cases. Same thing in the other different fields. It's fascinating to me to be able to learn through my clients about their industries and their fields. With the hedge funds, I work with quantitative mathematicians. I'm certainly not a quantitative mathematician.
Okay, good. Wow. I love your story. You have you wrote and you explained that you help leverage your practical experience toward new thinking for your clients, and you mentioned specifically the term emotional intelligence. I said that before, and I'll be honest with you, I'm not quite sure what all that entails, but it's a big term. Talk to me a little bit about the importance and the elements of emotional intelligence. What are we really talking about when you use that term?
There's so many different people who use it in so many different ways, and quite frankly, it's gotten hackneyed and it's gotten a bad rep over the last 10 years because people really don't understand what it is. Really, it's understanding and having self-awareness about what's going on in you when you are in difficult or challenging situations. It's really very difficult to control your responses, to be calculating, if you will. People are overworked and overwhelmed. In order to be emotionally intelligent, you have had to, at some point, whether it's through a personal crisis like I mentioned earlier, or because you've read and you understand, you have to examine after a while who you are. You know, there's a story we all tell about ourselves over the years. Maybe you tell yourself that you're always you're very good at operations, but maybe you've always told yourself you're not so creative. Or maybe you're very good at strategy, but you're not very good at operations. You have to step back and reexamine that story you tell about yourself to understand who you are and why you are. If you don't have self-awareness as a senior business leader in this day and age, you will not succeed. There's a very famous quote. When the 75 members of the Stanford Graduate School of Business Advisory Council were asked to recommend the most important capability for leaders to develop, their answer was nearly unanimous, and it was self-awareness. So truly, emotional intelligence is connected to how aware you are about yourself.
That's interesting. Do you find that a lot of people simply are not aware of
I think most people
where they
know
are.
What makes them tick.
Yeah.
Most people know what makes them tick. When I get a new client, whether it's they're referred to me through their own organization or it's somebody who requests nowadays, more and more people are simply requesting a coach. And then it's referrals. The business is run on referrals to a great deal. once you have the qualifications, it's word of mouth. So when I meet somebody new, they have a particular reason for wanting to change. I always want to know what that is. What is it that they want to change? Mm-hmm. I always want to know what their opinion is, their boss's opinion, the opinion of people around them. And then before we do any work on anything, I want to know what their behavioral DNA is, what makes them tick. You know, nowadays you can go to 23andMe or these other human genome companies where you can actually unlock your own genome. Well, not unlock it, but you can explore your own ancestry through your genes.
Right.
Behaviorally, I'm still an IBM or dyed in the wool. I want some data about you. One of the tools that I use gives me 88 behavioral traits and measures on a scale of 0 to 100. How much tact do you have? How much analysis do you lean upon? All different kinds of things. How responsible? How decisive? How much patience do you have? So we know on a scale of 0 to 100 what your behavioral DNA looks like, and we can see what you're made of behaviorally. Then we can try and understand a little bit about how that plays out in your everyday work situations and why you might act the way you do under different circumstances.
You know, how do you find out all of that? Because this is not stuff you say you want to find out about your client. You don't find out that kind of stuff on a resume.
No. No, and it's an escalating. You have to have some chemistry with your client. You and I had talked about this before, Doug. If I meet somebody and there's chemistry isn't quite there, or it doesn't seem like the right match, perhaps they need a male coach instead of a female coach for whatever the reasons are. I'm happy to refer them to someone who they match with, because the way it works is you become introduced, you sit down, hopefully you meet in person at that beginning point. Perhaps you have a meal or a cup of coffee, and you get a sense of one another. If you agree to work together, then you learn to build trust with one another. And basically, it's a you show me yours, I'll show you mine. So I may tell some stories about how I've failed and recovered in the past, or I may say, you know, tell something vulnerable about myself, perhaps discuss my former illness or difficulties that I've encountered in my own career. And that helps people have some ease about explaining what's going on with them.
There's so many questions I have to ask you, but let me ask you something that sounds simple, but maybe people don't understand this, and you could explain this. What specifically is coaching? How do you describe it?
Okay, so let me give you an easy way of distinguishing between coaching and therapy. Therapy is standing right here in the current, in the presence, figuring out a problem, and then dissecting the past to try and understand about your family of origin or the circumstances of your childhood or whatever it is. In coaching, you're at the present now, and you're looking forward. It's looking at the past but not staring at it. We want to be informed by the past to some degree, but we're not staring at the past. What we're doing is we're going to think. In therapy, you think your way into right action. In coaching, you act your way into right thinking. So let me give you an example. Sometimes I'll give my clients experiments to do. So one particular executive that I hadn't heard from in a while, just was on the phone with him this morning. We're going to go back to a once-a-month arrangement. And he has sparkling ideas in his head that his organization needs. This is a partner, very senior partner. But he has trouble unpacking his ideas to manageable chunks for his subordinates to enact. So for somebody like that, it's a little different than somebody else.
I love that term, unpacking his ideas. That's a neat way to put it. Do you find that people you work with are intimidated by your background and your experience when they come to you?
Doug, it's never about me. It can never be about me. That's another thing about coaching. My clients know their own answers. They have an expectation, though, that I will have had some professional success, and I'll give you another example. I got a call, a referral actually, through Duke to work with a very senior, well-known doctor at a prize-winning academic institution. When I was chosen as his coach, he had an expectation that I would have had success both in my fields and peripheral success. It was actually reassuring to him because he felt he was meeting an equal, even though I know squat about medicine. It was something he was able to lean on and feel confident about, that I did have a level of success as he did.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare that I talk about myself in kind of an interview like this. But my experience needs to be there for them to feel reassured that I have some similar or like experience in life. I guess that's the best way to put it.
Well, I think that's very understandable, indeed. I would, I'd feel that would be the same way, too, if I were coming to you. Let me ask you this. What do you think they expect from you as a coach when a client comes to you? What are they looking for?
Well, people come to you for a variety of reasons to get coaching. Sometimes it's, I mentioned it earlier, it's part of the company's culture, continuous improvement. There are internal coaches, there are external coaches. It's part of what the company does. Sometimes the company or a person will call you because they're struggling. A company went through an extensive hiring process. A recent example, somebody brought in a CFO, and that CFO, after 6 months, was failing. So they hired a coach to help that person become successful. They had spent a great deal of money, and it was things that the organization could see the person just needed to learn. Transitions. Somebody's got a new responsibility. Maybe they another example. Somebody just who used to work in the United States now has responsibility for employees in India. Another good example, transition of managing people who used to be their peers. So I used to work with you, now I'm your superior. Sometimes it's about large leaps in responsibility or scope. A very different twist is, what's next? Maybe I hate my job. What can I do to tolerate what I'm doing right now as I bridge across the next, call it 3 years, 5 years, until I get to my retirement? And then something that's come up in my practice more so in the last 2 years than ever is people in their, say, mid-50s, some even younger if they've made a great deal of money in private equity, calling and saying, I'm going to be done with this part of my life soon. I'm looking at my next act. I need to know what's next for me. How can I explore that? So those are really exciting conversations. Again, sometimes it's because they hate what they're doing, and they want to look to the future, and sometimes it's the natural course of things. So the variety is really striking.
Well, how do you handle someone who comes in and hates their job, but they're in a situation where, hey, they've been in the corporation for 15 years or more or whatever,
sure, they're vested,
and they know they've got retirement
options
coming down the road. They can't walk away, it would be stupid to do that. How do they carry on when they hate what they're doing? That's a terrible way to have to live. But I know that,
cases,
I bet there are many who do that.
Yeah, and in many cases there are large amounts of money at stake, sometimes large blocks of stock.
Yeah.
There are different vetting stages that stock takes. So you have to be concerned about the financial health of your client. And by the way, I always insist that if a client is verging on having financial difficulties, that they have a financial advisor. If a client is verging on psychological difficulties, I need to know that they have a therapist. So it's not just coaching. Sometimes it's a team of people. But
wow.
That said, when somebody is in a job that they really hate, one of the secrets I have found is if you can start working on whatever you think is next, as long as there's no conflict of interest.
Yeah.
Then it makes your everyday life a lot more tolerable, because sometimes at 10 o'clock at night, you're working on a business plan for what you're going to do next, or you're designing whatever it's going to be, a house perhaps. I have some clients who are going into real estate in their next act, and there's no conflict of interest with what they do during the day. So they're working on their real estate license. It's a first step anyway. Sometimes they may want to become an architect, but the first step is doing something in service to that. And magically, it makes the challenges at your work life seem more tolerable because you know what you're going to be doing next.
You know, I think you must be in a pretty fascinating profession at this point. I mean, having spent so many years at IBM and been dealing with the top executives there, give me an example of the kinds of people, and I'm not looking for names or anything, but the kinds of executives you're working with today, and I presume they are all executives, right?
Well, again, many walks of life. I have two attorneys, I think, right now, one medical doctor, a surgeon, at least a dozen partners at a professional services firm, at least two people at a hedge fund, and a partridge in a pear tree. What else can I tell you?
Goodness
And then that doesn't include people who pop up, like the gentleman did this morning. A gentleman from Washington popped up and said, hey, I'm looking at a transition, want to reengage you, you know, let's work together for 18 months like we used to.
Mm-hmm. You know, I can see why a business executive would be working with you. Why a doctor? Why would a doctor come to a coach like you?
Doctors don't come to me for help with medicine. They come, in this particular case, this doctor is looking at what's next. Wants to look at what's next and do it thoughtfully. Doctors can do many different things. They can go into research. They can design prostheses. Doctors can write and publish. They can serve on boards. They can mentor. They can work with foundations, go into research. There's a lot of different directions. But this particular doctor has an idea about what he wants to do next that's quite novel, very forward-thinking, and will make him very valuable if he can sell his idea. And it's also about looking towards the future and developing the next generation. That's really part of what his idea is about. Because one of the things that all leaders have to do now is think about who's next and who's coming up behind you. So for this particular person, it's a what's next conversation.
Coming from a family of doctors, I just found that an interesting point that you mentioned. One other thing, in addition to when I asked you what to expect from you as a coach, what do you expect from your clients? You must expect something from them as well. How would you answer that?
I expect each client to bring, to do the regular business blocking and tackling, to give me 24 hours if they're going to cancel, you know, those things. Past that, it's about integrity. Can you bring who you are to the conversation? If somebody is extreme, for instance, particularly in cases where their firm or company directs them to me, if there's going to be a lot of yes buts and denial about what might be going on if somebody's in trouble, I can't work with people who are not open to self-discovery.
Honestly,
I would feel the same way. If I was being forced to do something, I wouldn't want to engage in it. So I need to work with people who are open to the experience.
Very good. Marianne, I told you were going to be surprised when I told you we were running out of time. We have almost run out of time for this broadcast. You have so much information to pass along, and I need to point out you have a fabulous website that anybody listening to this broadcast, if they want to know more about you and your background and how to get in touch with you, it's very simple. It's your name, really. I'm going to spell it. It's MLEPRENOLAN.com. It stands the M for Marianne Lepre, Lepre Nolan, NOLAN.com. If they go to that website, they're going to learn a lot more about you and how you can help them and what you expect of them as well. So I thank you for taking the time to be with us. This has been a pretty remarkable discussion, and I've learned a lot, and I thank you for taking the time to be with us. Okay?
You're welcome, Doug, and I'd just like to invite anybody who's listening for a complimentary consultation, and everybody's welcome to call.
Oh, very good. Okay. Marianne Lepre Nolan, thank you so much, my dear. Her practice is based in Summers, New York, but in the winters, she's in Florida, Key West. Thanks very much. I'm Doug Llewellyn. Nice to have been with you. See you next time right here on Close Up Talk Radio. Have a great day wherever you are, everybody. Bye for now.